Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Bob Longman with the WUSB Concert Billboard for Saturday, February 11th. Barry Manilow will once again be at Radio City Music Hall in Manhattan at 8 p.m. The Kills and Jeff the Brotherhood will be at Terminal 5 in Manhattan at 9 p.m. The Met Opera in HD, Götterdämmerung, will be at the Stala Center for the Arts here on the Stony Brook campus at 12 noon. Tab Benoit will be at the Fairfield Theater at Stage 1 in Fairfield, Connecticut at 7:30 p.m. Tarbox Ramblers will be at the Grey Horse Tavern in Bayport at 9 p.m. Jonathan Edwards will be at the Bolton Center in Bayshore at 8 p.m. Citizen Cope will be at the Paramount in Huntington at 8 p.m. Dwayne Kerr will be at the Vale Leavitt Music Hall at 7 p.m. in Riverhead. At the Beanberry Cafe in Miller Place, Susan Bach with Mike McGaughey, and that's at 8 p.m. The Folk 2 Funk Festival will continue in Long Beach at the Long Beach Public Library Auditorium with Christine Sweeney and The Other Shoe. That starts at 7:30 p.m. Beleda will be at the Wolfer Estate Vineyards in Sagaponack, New York, at 7 p.m. Christine Spira will be at the Baiting Hollow Farm Vineyard in Baiting Hollow, New York, 1:30 p.m. And Meadowgrass Bluegrass Band will be at the Shop in Hicksville, 9 p.m. UWUSB Concert Billboard for Sunday, February 12th. The Stand Up 8 will be at the Stoller Center for the Arts here on the Stony Brook campus at 4 p.m. Vance Gilbert and Marcy Geller will be at the University Cafe here at the Stony Brook University campus, 2 p.m. Food Pantry Benefit featuring Kerry Carney, Chris P. Cawley, Joe Rock, and Noah's Ark will be at the Congregational Church of Patchogue. Ralph Stanley and the Clinch Mountain Boys will be at B.B. King's in Manhattan at 8 p.m. Dim Max Dead Meat Tour featuring Steve Aoki and Datsik will be at the Paramount in Huntington, 7 p.m. And the Folk 2 Funk Festival at Long Beach Public Library Auditorium will feature Pamela Lewis with John Hurley and the Ebony Hillbillies. That starts at 2 p.m. And Dida's Trio will be at the Palmer Vineyard in Riverhead at 2 p.m. This has been your WUSB Concert Billboard. Keep listening to WUSB to hear what concerts are coming up. Go to our WUSB Facebook site to see the most recent additions to the schedule. If you go to the WUSB website and look at the online version of the Concert Billboard there, you need directions, click on the name of the venue. You'll either get their website or set of directions to the venue. This is a service of WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 FM, WUSB.FM. Yeah.
It's 2 minutes after. Check 1, 2. Hello, hello. Can anyone hear me?
Okay, you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, where the microphones don't work. I'm sorry. I have a substitute microphone here, which sounds awful, but we're going to have to deal with it until this one gets fixed yet again. It's 2 minutes after 6 o'clock. You're listening to what else? WUSB Stony Brook. Time for Off the Wall. Okay, I think it's working now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think we have it all sorted now. It's like getting started on a big ship or something where you have to figure all the controls out every single time. But I wasn't going to complain about anything tonight. I was in such a good mood. The CD recorder is back. Everything is working, except when I turn on the microphone and hear nothing. Kind of puts a crimp in a talk show. But I think it's all working now. I think even the phone seems to be working. Can we test that? Does the phone actually... Yeah, see, there's a lot of static, but it's there. It's there. So we can take phone calls maybe a little bit later on. 631-632-9872. We'd love to hear what's on your mind this week as we do another live program here at the facilities of Stony Brook. I will complain. Not about the equipment. I'll complain about the weather again because it's just ungodly what's going on here. This is the first winter I can think of where I have not put the winter lining in my coat, and I don't think I will. That's how absurdly warm it's been. I'll go through the entire winter without having a winter coat because I don't need one. Just not right. It's like the summer where I never put in the air conditioning because it never got warm. That happened a few years ago. I didn't mind that so much. For some reason, cold is a lot more pleasant to me than heat. Excess cold, that is. Not sure if I'd be having a lot of fun in the Ukraine right about now, or other parts of Eastern Europe where it's plunged to minus 30 Celsius and a lot of people are dying on the streets. But at least, when you're in a civilized society, at least you can go inside and warm up. You know, have some hot chocolate or something and sit by the fireplace. And it's, in the heat, you know, it's, you have to go into air-conditioned buildings. It's not quite the same thing. But everyone has their preferences. Lots of things. Speaking of heat, I guess when you say the name Zambia, you think of heat because it's in the middle of Africa. And yeah, it's usually pretty hot there. It was very exciting there this week because, yeah, Zambia, they won the Cup of Nations, the Africa Cup of Nations, which is a football tournament that takes place. Soccer, of course. Can you imagine them playing American-style football in Zambia? Nah, I can't imagine that. Can't really imagine that at all. I can't believe they do it in Europe. People tell me that American football teams play games in Europe and people come and watch. I think they come and they point. They don't actually, they're not there for the entertainment. They're there for, well, it is entertainment. It's just kind of like, what in the world is this? What are they doing? I don't know. I don't understand how these things work. But I do know in Zambia, they were extremely happy because, well, they were the underdogs. Last week I said it's going to be Ghana versus Ivory Coast, or Cote d'Ivoire, as it's called in international circles. And it turned out that Ghana was actually defeated and didn't even make it to the final. So it was Zambia versus Cote d'Ivoire. And of course, everyone expected, I believe, the number 16 ranked team in the world, as far as countries, to beat the team that I think was something like 85 in the rank. And that didn't happen. And to make it even more dramatic, this was played in the country of Gabon. Gabon? How do you say that? You know, it doesn't come up in conversation nearly enough. I'm going to say Gabon because it just sounds better, and I think it's got more of a French sound. As long as we're saying Cote d'Ivoire, we might as well say Gabon. Anyway, that is where the final was played. It was also the exact same country where the entire Zambian national team, well, nearly the entire national Zambian team, was wiped out in a plane crash in 1993. So you can imagine how emotional something like this would be. And to actually win and be champions. And the thing that bugs me, I was following this just because of I'm interested in different countries, different cultures and things like that, and you kind of see this come out in football tournaments. You see it in the World Cup, you see it in Euro 2012 later on this year, or any Euro competition. And I would have liked to have watched a single game, but we're so Afrophobic in this country, in this hemisphere, you couldn't find it anywhere. It was on Eurosport. Who gets Eurosport? You know? And it's called Eurosport. It's supposedly for Europe, but no, they branch out and look at the world, but we don't. We have no interest. Even the final was not anywhere. Couldn't find it on pay-per-view. I mean, I suppose I could have gone online to some site and given them money and hoped that didn't crash my machine, or, but it's not the same thing as being able to just turn on a TV and see something. Meanwhile, you can see the same stupid episode of Home Makeover about 55 times and all kinds of other crap on 500 channels. You can see that, but you can't see something that the rest of the world is watching. That's important. And yeah, I know it's sports. I know it's organized sports. We're not supposed to enjoy that. We're supposed to focus on serious matters. But sometimes diversions are good. And to those people who think that it's silly for folks in Zambia to be celebrating and to be really, really happy this week, let me ask, when would you say they should be happy? When is the time? When is the time to jump up and down and celebrate? And I'll bet you're going to come up pretty short. You're not going to be able to come up with a good example of a time where everybody can just sort of take a day off from work and school and celebrate and be happy just to be where they are at that time. It's the same exact logic that was used by people who didn't want to celebrate when Obama was elected. Because, oh, it's just going to be the same thing over and over again. Yeah, but you know what? We have one day or one night where we can just be happy for a change. Sure, in a couple of months, it's all going to fall apart, and we're going to know that we're doomed for the same nonsense down the road. But we can at least share in some happiness for a little while, and through that, maybe get some power, some organization, something. But there's never anything wrong with being happy. So anyway, congratulations to Zambia. I don't know anybody from Zambia. I don't think I do. But sure does sound like a swell place to be right about now. And sure wish it was covered here in this country, maybe next time. Actually, the next Cup of Nations is being played next year. I think they do it every 2 years, but they're switching it now so that it doesn't conflict with World Cup or Euro or something. So it'll be in odd-numbered years. All right. Oh, yeah, here's another sports story. I don't want to go on the sports side of things for the moment. This other team you might have heard of played a different kind of football, American-style football. This team called the New York Giants, that don't play in New York, they won the Super Bowl, which apparently is some kind of game. Less than 24 hours after they did this, the state of New York announced the release of a commemorative license plate to honor the team's championship. But the decision to sell that plate has angered groups that have been trying for years to get the state to create customized plates for them. In 2004, the Department of Motor Vehicles placed a moratorium on designing new custom plates, which was a response to a lawsuit filed by an adoption advocacy group that had sought such a plate. And they wanted to have the slogan "Choose Life" on their license plates. And that was deemed a political statement and was denied and led to all kinds of legal things, and wound up everybody had to be put on hold until all this was resolved, which apparently never will be. But in the case of the Giants, so they kind of leapfrogged right over that, and now they have a special commemorative plate. Now they're saying that, well, it's just a modification of a previous plate, so it's not really the same thing as making a new plate. But does that mean that, you know, we can just change the words of, the Empire State, and maybe make it the pro-life state or something if you're an anti-abortion group, you know, and it's just a modification of an existing one? Yeah, it's kind of shallow logic as far as I'm concerned. Why can't we have political statements on license plates? I'm not sure why that's such a horrible thing. You know, it's as many different things as possible. Why not? The thing I don't get, though, if you're a cop and there are so many different kinds of license plates within one state, let alone all the different states, how do you ever tell what state just passed by at 70 miles an hour and, you know, you just caught a glimpse of their tag as it went by? It used to be easy. You know, occasionally they changed the design, but everybody changed at the same time. Now we have a situation where they have new orange plates, and you can opt in on this. This was after some resistance from people who didn't like being forced to pay for new license plates. Now, I can't understand why anybody would opt to get new license plates and pay more money. It doesn't make any sense if your old one works perfectly well. But yet people are doing this. I'm holding on to mine until they disintegrate. I mean, it works just fine. I don't really care if it's white or orange or whatnot. Just trying to keep my vehicles from falling apart in the first place. So, yeah, you know, when you've got a sports team behind you, there's nothing you can't do. And I guess New York State is proving that. I shouldn't knock New York State. New York State is doing some good things, moving ahead, moving into the 20th century. You know, I'm referring to the gay marriage thing, which took place last year. And it took place in such a way where it just kind of happened. And then it was over. Let's put this behind us. Okay, it's perfectly fine. Moving on now. Unfortunately, the rest of the country can't really seem to do that. I was hoping that once New York joined the relatively few states where gay marriage is allowed, that everybody else would just sort of follow or just realize that this is a waste of time to continue arguing. Well, apparently it's still a very big deal in many parts of the country being able to adjust to this. And right next door in New Jersey, for instance, where the New York Giants play, Governor Chris Christie has vowed to veto any bill that even has the words gay marriage in it. Why is it always the most unattractive people are the ones that are most anti-gay marriage? I don't understand this. There's got to be a correlation somewhere. But the fear and the hatred is just unbelievable. And there's a real fight brewing in New Jersey. They voted 24-16 in favor of the bill. The New Jersey State Senate did. Now, I think that's two or three votes, maybe as many as four votes shy of what is needed to override a veto. And the governor has sworn, because this is the most important thing to him, sworn to veto this this bill. And get this. The issue, he says, should not be decided by 121 people in the state house in Trenton. So instead, he's going to decide and veto the thing. No, he says he wants a statewide referendum. And, you know, that's all fine and good. But here's the question. What happens when people vote for things that basically restrict others' rights? They've been known to do that in the past. Let's go back to the 1960s. And had you had a referendum on whether black people should have the same rights as white people, it would have lost. Does that make it right? You know, there are some points where you just sort of have to look at the Constitution, look at the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, look into your own self and ask, is this the right thing to do, to grant equal rights to people? And he's counting on people saying that, no, it's not right to do that in this particular case, even though probably in 5 years it'll be completely different as evolution marches on. Now, Washington State is a bit more advanced. They had the bill signed into law on Monday, I believe. But the opponents, again, want to have a referendum on Election Day. Now, it's kind of clever what they're doing by getting people all riled up about this issue. And you really have to sit back and wonder, why is this such a threat to them? What are they afraid of exactly? It's always good to get them talking about this because they come up with the most bizarre scenarios and fears and things like that. You know, how does it hurt you to have two people get married that certainly are not in contention in your particular circle of people that you're going to marry? So what's the threat to you? What is the actual threat? It's tearing down the fabric of society. I heard one lawmaker say, you know, we've been doing it this way for thousands of years and we should not deviate from the success of, and I think anything that points to the history of thousands of years, you're not really starting off on a positive note right there, because a lot happened in thousands of years that we really should not be emulating. And as we mentioned last week, things change around the world quite a bit. Every 19 years, constitutions tend to be rewritten. Not here, though. Not here. We want to hold on to stone tablets and never change them. And just watch the rest of the world move on. So they're planning on having a referendum in Washington. But it's clever because it brings people out to the polling stations who are enraged and threatened by all these gay people getting married. And while they're there, they're going to cast a ballot for a president. Yeah, why not? I wasn't going to do it anyway. But since I'm here, since I was brought out here because of those evil gay people wanting to control everything in the world, here I am. I'm going to vote for, who's it going to be? Mitt Romney or Rick Santorum? Can I even say that on the air? I'm not sure. I'm really not sure if I can say the S word like that on the air. I mean, look it up. Look up the meaning of Santorum. It's something else. We couldn't have a president with that name. We couldn't. But the Republicans are kind of torn right now because they're not really all that gung-ho about Romney. Not conservative enough. Meanwhile, he's on stage saying, "Oh, I'm really conservative. Look what I'll do. look whose rights I'll restrict. Look how unreasonable I can be." But it doesn't seem to be flying. So that's why somebody like Rick over there is poised to actually gain some momentum. Maybe he'll be the candidate. But regardless, in November, you'll have all these people there voting for the referendum, voting against the referendum, whatever, and also casting ballots. So I think that's sort of the strategy that's at work here. Even if the referendum doesn't go the way they want it to go, they still get all these people to come out and vote. And vote for the candidate they want them to vote for. So yeah, that's how politics works. It's always fun to watch. What else do we have happening? All kinds of things have been going on this week. You know, there was a rumor that Kim Jong-un was assassinated in Beijing. And it was fascinating to see how this this played out. Now, Weibo is the name of China's Twitter-like social media service. And they have wild rumors every day. But most of them kind of peter out. This one didn't. Western media picked up on the one that didn't, and they ran with it. The story goes that the new North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, was assassinated in Beijing during an unreported visit. The evidence was a couple of posts on Weibo, maybe even just one post, followed by a tweet from a Chinese blogger who stated, "Nothing is verified, only report of large number of cars at North Korean embassy, but rumors like this pop up every other week." And that was all it took. The story was circulating in Western social media and in Western newsrooms throughout an entire day, generating speculative news stories that repeated the rumor and added little else, all of it urged on by readers desperate to know more. And then Gawker ran a post with the somewhat misleading headline, "Chinese Twitter says Kim Jong-un was assassinated this morning in Beijing." About 300,000 readers checked in within the first few hours. Then around 3 p.m., as the rumor continued to swirl, a Twitter account called BBC Live News tweeted, "Confirmed breaking news, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un assassinated, updates to follow." Within an hour, that had been retweeted by over 2,000 people, reaching who knows how many thousands of users. But, BBC Live News Twitter account. Go to it now. You'll see how interesting it is. It was a fake account that somebody registered. And you could tell this very easily because if you looked at it at the time and you looked at their previous tweets, you saw that most of them were harassing messages directed at somebody named Gary Glitter. And now if you look at it, it's basically just saying this is a false account, has nothing to do with BBC, everything on here is not true, etc. So, yeah, you know, anything is possible in the world of North Korea, certainly, and in the world of media. But did this happen? No, it did not. But it was fueled by all kinds of people retweeting, spreading things around, not checking sources, making assumptions. Same old thing. All right, we'll be taking phone calls in a little bit. 631-632-9872. I watched a film last night that I have not seen in decades called The Day After. I had this in my library. I said, why not? You know, I haven't seen this in a while. And I got to say, The Day After, it's about a nuclear strike on the United States, actually a nuclear strike throughout the world. Back in the days of the U.S. and the Soviet Union, there was an incident in West Germany, and things just kept escalating from there. The story focuses on people in the states of Kansas and Missouri, near where missile bases are, and how this affected them. Obviously, missile bases would be a target in such such a conflict, and it sure was in this case. Now, when this film aired on ABC, it was a huge story. In fact, it was probably the story of the year. Everybody was talking about this. Everybody watched it. I think over 100 million people watched it when it aired on a Sunday night. And I remember at the time, I judged it kind of harshly. In fact, I remember it being worse than it actually seemed to be when I saw it last night. When I saw it last night, it actually was pretty effective. And I do recommend people going out and finding this. Might be online, might be in a video store if they still exist. The Day After. Yeah, it was huge. And it's just watching it all build up. In fact, there's even a radio show of us talking about this the day after The Day After, I think on Chatterbox. I got to say, we seem to have forgotten an awful lot. Because back then, people were very concerned about this sort of thing. They were very worried that the arms race was getting out of control, and it certainly was. Especially with rhetoric being thrown back and forth between two superpowers. People were afraid, and they had reason to be. Thousands of nuclear warheads just poised to be deployed, and the horrible things that would happen if they were. Living on the edge constantly. And we seem to have just completely put that in the back of our minds, because there is still a lot of destructive force out there. And a lot of unreasonable people. And the times when things like this happen are the times you least expect it. So, you know, I'm kind of worried that I watched this for a reason, that something in the back of my mind is telling me that we're on the precipice of something. But I think it's good to remind yourself that, you know, the problems aren't fixed. They haven't gone away. They're still there, and they still have to be dealt with. And it's when they're not on the front pages that the bad things happen. And so it's really, really important to keep this as a topic of discussion, something that that we continuously address, talk about, demand some kind of action, some kind of resolution. Less stupidity. And boy, is there a lot of stupidity out there. I mean, we're talking about, last week we mentioned this briefly about the prospects that Israel was going to attack Iran because Iran dared to research nuclear power or nuclear technology of any sort. Now, Iran is claiming that their nuclear technology is only used for peaceful purposes. You can believe that, or you can assume they're lying. But regardless, it's something they're doing in their own country. And it might rub us the wrong way, and it certainly rubs me the wrong way, because nuclear power and nuclear arms, they are all pretty dangerous, as Fukushima showed us last year. And that's another thing. In our country, when all throughout the rest of the world, in Japan and Germany and Belgium, the nuclear industry is shutting down because people finally realize this isn't something that we can get a handle on at this stage in our development. And the risks are just too great. We're talking about entire neighborhoods that will not be able to be populated for decades because of what happened last year, because of a natural disaster that caused this catastrophe. No place on Earth is immune from natural disasters or any kind of disaster. It could happen anywhere. Now, if you had asked the operators of Fukushima a year ago, yeah, ask them 1 year ago today, because the disaster didn't happen until March of last year. If you asked them, you know, is it possible that something as bad as Chernobyl could happen here? And they would have said with all confidence, oh, absolutely not, because Chernobyl, they didn't know what they were doing, but we do, and we have all these extra safety precautions, et cetera, et cetera. But in the two plants that they've licensed in the last week in Georgia, if you ask them, well, could Fukushima happen here? Oh, no, of course not, because we have all this new technology and safety designs, and they didn't know what they were doing. It just keeps happening time after time after time. How many times do you want to be proven right? Clearly, there's something that we don't quite grasp yet. We're not there. Maybe we'll get there someday. I'm all for advancing technology, but I'm also for calling it out when obviously something isn't working or the risk is just too great. And that is certainly the case here. So, yeah, you know, in the case of Iran, I would say, you know, it's not a good idea, guys. Let's not go down that road. But ultimately, it's their decision, not Israel's. And okay, speaking of Israel, how about their nuclear stockpile, which they've never even admitted to, but everybody knows it's there. You know, Israel is all going crazy on worrying about what Iran's going to do with nuclear technology. Well, how about the neighbors of Israel? How do you think they feel knowing that that country has, what, 1,000 warheads? Was it estimated at? A huge number. Who are they for? Who are they going to use them on? You know, I guarantee they're not going to use them on other nuclear powers. They're not liable to lob a missile at North Korea or Pakistan. Doesn't seem likely. If they use it anywhere, they'll use it on their neighbors. So if I was one of their neighbors, I would say, you know, we need to have the same thing that they have, the whole mutual self-assured destruction thing. And while I hate all this thinking, I think it's all stupid and counterproductive and one step closer to our extinction, I can certainly understand the logic. And the fact that we're all just sort of sitting back and watching and saying, oh, when are they going to attack Iran? And this will be interesting. It's the same kind of response that leads to worse things. Occasionally, you know, we see this happen in our normal lives as well. We see a fight break out and we say, oh, boy, this is just going to keep getting more and more interesting. Or we add to it. Hey, did you hear what this person said about this person? Boy, you better do something about that before it gets out of control. Or we attack the people that we care about the most and say hurtful things to them and watch situations just spiral out of control. The same thing can happen on a world scale. That's how world wars begin. That's how any war begins. That's how genocide begins. Kind of want to, you know, poke the embers a little bit and get the flame going again. Because why? It's interesting. Yeah, it's fascinating to watch this unfold. But there's a really terrible price to pay for that when we just sort of let it happen and don't try to make things better. And in this particular case, yeah, it looks like they're going down a very bad road, a very bad road. And it could escalate and create all kinds of additional conflicts and lots of casualties. And, you know, the latest thing, and then we'll open up some phone calls after this. The latest thing, there was some kind of an attack on, what was it, on an embassy? Where's the story? There's always something going on. There were attacks today. There were attacks yesterday as well. And the only evidence that was used to implicate Iran was that, well, this is the kind of thing they do. I've heard this so many times. Yeah, here we go. A bomb injures an Israeli diplomat's wife. Analysts say the twin attacks in India and Georgia may be the latest round of retaliatory violence between Iran and Israel. So without any evidence, Iran is blamed. I mean, you know, you need evidence before you can actually say, well, it's obvious who did this. But Prime Minister Netanyahu said Iran is behind these attacks. It is the biggest exporter of terror in the world. I don't know. There's a lot of contenders for that title. But just because there was an attack without any evidence, this is proof. And then today there was some kind of an explosion in Thailand, in Bangkok. Somebody who was believed to be Iranian threw a hand grenade at a cop, and it wound up ricocheting and blowing off the perpetrator's legs or something like that. And yeah, because he's believed to be Iranian, well, that's further proof. That's further proof. So we're going to go around now looking for any crime committed by an Iranian as proof that Iran is out to get Israel. You know, if an Iranian clerk shortchanges you at the local store, well, that's more proof for you right there. Just add it to the list. That's a level of logic. And meanwhile, you have a situation where nuclear scientists are being blown up in Iran, but nobody knows who's doing it. You think maybe that might be Israel doing this. It's quite possible. But we're kind of not making accusations there. But when Iran is involved, yeah, okay, the Iranians did it. Let's just blame the Iranians. They're the boogeyman of the month, I guess. It's so insane. It's so insane what's going on over here. And it just never seems to get any better. So, you know, what I believe we should be doing is having a stern talking to Israel, saying, you're not attacking anybody. I don't know if you want any more support from us. You've got all these nuclear weapons, you know, and none of your enemies have them. So you're already in a position that you shouldn't be in. All right. Now I've got myself all worked up about that. Let's move over to the phone lines. Our phone number is 631-632-9872. And we're going to pray together, hope that the delay system works. And if it does, we'll be back in just a moment, taking your phone calls.
Hi, this is Arthur Lee of Love, and you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook.
And here we are, we're back. Our phone number is 631-632-9872. Everything seems to have worked out fairly well. Now, the next challenge, of course, is getting the phone lines to ring, and then after that, the challenge will be getting them to go out over the air. Everything is always a challenge, but that's what makes it interesting. All right, I see one line lighting up. Can I ask for two? Would that be too much to ask for? One more phone call coming in? 631-632-9872. You can call from anywhere in the world. You can call locally. You can call from overseas. And now we lost the one call we had. Okay, all right. I can read a letter instead. And once I start reading the letter, obviously I can't stop until I finish. So I'll give people about 15 more seconds to call in before I start reading the letter. How's that? 631-632-9872. All right, let's take a phone call and see who's out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hi, I don't want you to read a letter.
What, you called in to ask me to read a letter?
No, I don't want you to read a letter.
Oh, you don't? Okay. All right, well, let's talk to you instead. Where are you calling from? Turn down your radio. You'll get very confused.
Sorry?
Turn down your radio as we're on delay and you'll get confused.
I hear that.
Yeah. So where are you calling from?
Stony Brook. Woo!
What, the university?
Yeah, I have no idea you guys were calling from Stony Brook, so here I am.
Wow. How about that? You know, we don't get nearly enough Stony Brook listeners.
I didn't know we were Stony Brook, and then you said your number 632. I'm like, I know that area.
Wow. And so are you a student here?
I am a student, and I'm an international studies minor, so
wow.
I guess I'm lucky I tuned into your radio.
That's great. That's really amazing. And where do you hail from?
I'm from Babylon.
Okay, so you're fairly local. That's amazing. So any comments on some of the world topics we were addressing?
Yeah. I mean, Israel. So here's the big deal. We keep pointing fingers at Iran, right? And saying they're developing nuclear weapons, but at the same time, we can argue that they've only enriched their uranium to a mere fraction of what nuclear weaponry requires.
Right.
So, I mean, in Iran's defense, and, you know, they signed the non-proliferation treaty, so, you know, it would be suspect if we had real reason to believe that they were making weapons. So, you know, it all makes sense. I understand Israel's tense. Israel seems anxious to attack right now, but
they sure do.
You can't blame Iran for being pissed at us. I mean,
yeah, I know that's the thing. We read all these stories saying, okay, Israel's planning to attack Iran. Israel's going to attack. It's happening. It's going to happen in March or April, something like that. Get your tickets now. And then Iran says,
yeah.
If you attack us, we're going to attack you back. And then the headlines read, Iran threatens Israel with attack. And come on, what do you expect? You're going to threaten somebody with you know, an invasion or destroying their technology, and then you act all indignant when they say we're going to respond if you do that. It's insane.
That's just it. You know, they're the bad guys, and it's all about, you know, it's the media's perspectives. It's what you're reading, you know. It, depending on what kind of paper you're reading, you can get a pretty unbiased opinion, but, you know, American media is biased by nature, and you see it, I've seen it a lot, mostly in the Israel-Iran, just the amount of bias is, you have to keep reading for whatever facts you can get, but...
Right. Well, we love to make bad guys. We love to have bad guys, people that we can demonize no matter what they do, and I guess that adds legitimacy to whatever side that you espouse.
Yeah, at the same time, I mean, okay, we have to be on our guard. If Iran is making nuclear weaponry, we need to inspect that, but I think that we're completely just premature in our accusations. I think Iran has every right to be pissed and not necessarily threatening us, because that's never really diplomatically an okay thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there's, I think we need to relax a little bit, and I think that especially Israel, we need to really talk to, you know, Netanyahu and I think we need to cool it a little bit. I don't think anyone's ready for a war over what could be nothing.
Right, and also, you know, I'm not a proponent of nuclear arms by any sense. I'm far from that. I'm the exact opposite. You know, where do we come off telling somebody you're not allowed to have this kind of technology, and we are? It just doesn't make sense.
I mean, yes, we signed the treaty too. We had the technology to begin with, but, you know, Israel has the technology, France, but we don't, you know, they're on our side, so it's okay, right?
And even North Korea has it, and that's why North Korea doesn't get attacked. So maybe that you know, shows a message to these other people that if we get a nuclear defense of some sort, then we'll be safer from all these people that already have nuclear arms and are threatening us.
Well, you know that the multi-trillion dollar nuclear defense missile project that's been proposed for God knows all of Europe and, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
That's a lot of money, and I don't know if we even have the money to start dreaming about things like that, but the whole, you know, you can't attack someone who has nuclear weapons. It worked for, you know, half a century in the Cold War, right?
Yeah, and unfortunately, that is something that seemed to have worked, but we need to sort of back down from that, and not, because eventually somebody is going to do something irrational, the more countries and organizations that have access to these things. So, yeah, we're very lucky. We dodged a bullet, and that's one thing I learned watching this film last night is, wow, we were close. In fact, you know, I read afterwards that even Reagan was moved by the film, and it affected the way he thought about the whole thing. It was shown on Soviet television at one point, affected people there. So, yeah, you really can influence things with art, with portraying what might happen in a certain situation. That's why we need to keep talking about it.
That's the thing. You know, people underestimate the power of media, and
mm-hmm.
you know, the more you know, American headlines are Iran this, Iran that, and Netanyahu, honestly, I believe, has a pretty big mouth, but, you know, as long as we're not going to ever stop supporting him.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes us look like a band of assholes, to be completely frank about it.
So. I think we can criticize him, though. We shouldn't be afraid to do that. We shouldn't be afraid to speak up and say, no, you're not right here. We still support you, but you're wrong, you know?
It's like a marriage or something. Like, honey, I respect your opinion, but please shut up now. You're embarrassing me.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting correlation there. Listen, I want to thank you so much for calling, and I hope that you listen to our station and spread the word about it on campus.
Yeah, I hope so, too. I hope you get more callers. So you don't have to read your letter, whatever that may be.
Well, I think we're done with the callers for tonight, and you were a great call, and I hope that you're a regular listener and that more Stony Brook students get involved, because, you know, this place was a real bastion of activity decades ago, and it helped to change the world a bit, and it can still do that.
Hi. Well, you know, this was just by chance that I tuned in, so I'll try to spread the word. I know a few people who would be interested. So.
Cool. All right. Thanks so much for calling.
No problem.
Take care. And let's get out of delay. Yeah, here we go. We're out of delay now. Interesting call and interesting topics as well. And yeah, this whole nuclear thing has really got me thinking, you know, because like I said, we still have the same threats. We still have the same mentality that can lead us into complete devastation if we're not careful. And they contradict themselves so much. Yeah, nuclear power is safe. It's not the same thing as having nuclear bombs, but we can't let Iran have nuclear power because they might use that technology to make nuclear bombs. So you can't have it both ways, you know? Is having a nuclear power plant the same thing as having the nuclear technology to attack neighbors and to have catastrophic accidents and things like that? You know, it's either safe or it's not. And if it's not safe for them to have it, it's not safe for us to have it, and we should move away from that. All right, we've got a fairly long outro, so I'm going to move into that now and ask people to write in otw@2600.com. And next week, I'm sure we'll be talking about this and other issues because something will have happened in the 7 days between now and then. So until then, this is Emmanuel for Off the Wall. Stay awake. Keep arguing. Keep thinking. Keep investigating. It's always interesting. Good night.
Attention all you rule breakers, you misfits and troublemakers, all you free spirits and pioneers, all you visionaries and nonconformists. Everything the establishment has told you is wrong with you is actually what's right with you. You see things others don't. You are hardwired to change the world. Unlike 9 out of 10 people, your mind is irrepressible, and this threatens authority. You were born to be a revolutionary. You can't stand rules because in your heart you know there's a better way. You have strengths dangerous to the establishment, and it wants them eliminated. So your whole life you've been told your strengths were weaknesses. Now I'm telling you otherwise. Your impulsivity is a gift. Impulses are your key to the miraculous. Your distractibility is an artifact of your inspired creativity. Swings reflect the natural pulse of life. They give you unstoppable energy when you're high, and deep soulful insight when you're low. Been diagnosed with a disorder? That's society's latest way to deny its own illness by pointing the finger at you. Your addictive personality is just a symptom of your vast, underused capacity for heroic creative expression and spiritual connection. Your utter lack of repression, your wide-eyed idealism, your unmitigated open mind. Didn't anyone ever tell you? These are the traits shared by the greatest pioneers and visionaries, innovators, revolutionaries, procrastinators, and drama queens, activists on the social scene, space cadets and mavericks, philosophers and derelicts, business suits flying fighter jets, football stars and sex addicts, celebrities with ADD, alcoholics who seek novelty, first responders, prophets and saints, mystics and JJJs. We are the same, you know. primal substrate of the cosmos. It guides the very current of time and space. The way is known by some as the will of God, divine providence, the Holy Spirit, the implicate order, the Tao, reverse entropy, life force. But for now, we'll simply call it the way. The way is reflected in you as the source of your inspiration, the source of your passions, your wisdom, your enthusiasm, your intuition, your spiritual fire, love. The way takes the chaos out of the universe and breathes life into it, giving it divine order. The way, when expressed by the mind, is genius. When perceived through the eyes, is beauty. When felt through the senses, is grace. When allowed into the heart, is love. Cannot sense the way directly, but then there are the wayseers, the keepers of the flame. Wayseers have an unexplainable knack for just knowing the way. They sense it in their very being. They can't tell you why or how they arrived at the right answer. They just know it in their core. They can't show their work, so don't ask. Their minds simply resonate with the way. When the way is present, so are they. While others are blind to it, and society begs you to ignore it, the way stirs you inside. Neurological repression blocks most people's awareness of the way. Censoring all thoughts and impulses from the unconscious is their prefrontal cortex, the Gestapo of the brain. Nothing which violates its socialized programming even gets through. But your mind is different. Your mind has been cracked wide open to the way. By some miraculous genetic trait, some psychotropic chemical, or maybe even by the will of your own soul, your brain's reward pathways have been hijacked. Dopamine employed to overthrow the fascist dictatorship of your prefrontal cortex. Now your brain is free of repression. Your mind free of censorship. Your awareness exposed to the turbulent seas of the unconscious. Through this open doorway, divine light shines into your consciousness, showing you the way. This is what makes you a wayseer. 90% of human civilization is populated with those whose brains are blocked to the way. Their brains are hardwired to enforce the social programming indoctrinated since birth. Unlike you, they cannot break out of this programming because they have not yet experienced the necessary revolution of mind. These programmed people take social institutions and rules very seriously. Society is full of games programmed to keep people's minds occupied so they will not revolt. These games often cause sick fixations on peculiar protocols, power structures, taboos, and domination. All subtle forms of human bondage. This distinct form of madness is not only tolerated by the masses, but insisted upon. The programmed ones believe in rules so forcefully, they become willing to destroy anyone who violates them. Wayseers are the ones who call their bluff. Since wayseer minds are free to reject social programming, wayseers readily see these social institutions for what they are, imaginary games. Wayseers comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable. Helping those who are lost in these games and refuse to help themselves is the calling of many wayseers. Since wayseers are the ones who keep contact with the original source of reality, they are able to disrupt societal conventions and even governments to realign humanity with the way. The wayseers are an ancient lineage, a kind of priesthood, carriers of the flame, ones in the know. There must always be wayseers to reform the dizzying, psychotic, spinning wheels of society. Giant, mindless hamster wheels obscuring the pure blue sky. Wayseers reveal this divine truth by devoting themselves to the birth of some creative or disruptive act. a solidarity, changes that leave a legacy, rebellions against policy, spirit-infused technology, moments of clarity, things that challenge barbarity, watersheds of sincerity, momentous drives for charity. We are all the same, you know, 'cause we're all affected by the way. We are all the same, you know, 'cause we're all attracted to the flame. This is your calling, Wayseer. You found your tribe. Welcome home.